Diversity Music Group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the East, live and live in color. NJ fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars and women, women and more women. More sin and I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, ma, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree.
Edition of the Green and White Show here on this Sunday, November 15th, 2015 at 8:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, it's your boys Joseph Haas and Amiri Tella here with you. Haas, my man, how are you?
I'm feeling very successful right now. Okay, success being the theme of the morning. Wow, so much to talk about in the world of sports, Amiri. I mean, hey, one of us successfully predicted how the Jets were going to make it through their 1-1 week. We're going to talk about the keys to a successful New York Jets victory here against the Patriots as they host the perfect Patriots. I wonder where we heard that storyline before. Some college teams successful in staying in the college playoff, some not. We'll talk about then. Hey, Brooklyn Nets, Amiri, so close to success against my Golden State Warriors. So close. And I'll tell you one person who's not feeling as successful as she has been the past few years. We're going to get into UFC 193, man, and a whole lot more. Amiri Tillich there, Joseph Haas here. We plan to successfully bring you another Green and White Show. Amiri, why am I still talking? The keys to success is when we both talk. So, why are you ready to talk some Jets football? Or what?
Indeed, Haas. And, you know, we talked about last week, you know, the situation that the Jets would definitely have to, have to address as the season continues, as their season was a little bit on a bit of a seesaw, really. I mean, the Jets they started off the season fantastically with the two opening wins, and they got a little bit of a stumble, kind of bounced back, another little stumble, bounced back, and now it seems like they're back maybe in a position where they have to rebound. They have to rebound after a 22-17 loss against the Buffalo Bills. So I don't know exactly what the conversation should be after a game like this, where you enter it with expectations that you should be able to come out and at least be competent against the Buffalo Bills team that you kind of expect to beat or at least have success against. But in a game like that, Haas, I don't know what the initial conversation is. The Jets didn't get anything from the running game. Didn't get anything, you know, from their receivers, really. They were very stagnant all across the field, and it didn't help, obviously, that you know, Buffalo on the other end was playing some pretty nice ball. So I don't know exactly how to sum up a game like that, except I just think the Jets need to come out, be more prepared, and take advantage of different situations that they probably won't get throughout the rest of the season.
Buffalo Bills 4-2 with Tyrod Taylor starting as their quarterback. Now 5-2 after the win versus the Jets. That was one of the keys to victory there. They seem to look like a very competent football team with Taylor under center there. He can move again with Coach Roman. I've got a lot of familiarity. I'm very familiar with Greg Roman as a former offensive coordinator of the San Francisco 49ers during Colin Kaepernick's good days. You know he's going to be able to use Taylor's legs to get him in position to use that big arm. I'm going to try to isolate the reads for Taylor, making football very simple for him to go out there and just, you know, just kind of execute. And that's what seems to have happened. They jumped out real early on the Jets, going up as high as 22-3 in that game against the Bills, Amiri. Yeah, the Jets were able to take care of business and a little shaky at that against the Jags, but they did run into a buzzsaw in the Rex Ryan leg. Buffalo Bills, a lot of hype during Buffalo Bills week, and Rex Ryan soaked it all in. You know, definitely an enjoyable enjoyable game for his fans. And, you know, he lost me a little bit there making IK a captain, but it was a Rex thing to do. One of the reasons why I'm not banging up on the running game as much as most are, Amiri, because that was, like we talked about on this show, one of the keys to the Jets being able to show, you know, some improved offense there and a steady and consistent offensive flow, including being one of the better teams in the red zone, Amiri, is that run game. But the reason why the run game, in my opinion, has been a little shaky, it's not just the lack of production from a Chris Ivory or even the fact that Bilal Powell has been missing time in and out, but it's been the fact that the offensive line has also been a little shaky. We talked about that in the beginning of the season and a lot during the offseason, Amiri, about this New York Jets team was going to be defined by how their line of scrimmage play and how effective it was, whether it was on the offensive line creating holes for the running game to give Fitzy some time to throw the ball, or on the defensive side of the ball where they're able to attack opponents' quarterbacks and allow for their secondary to do its job. The defensive side of the ball has had some fits and starts, but they've been pretty darn good at controlling the line of scrimmage. They look good. But with injuries, Amiri, to Willie Colon now on IR and Nick Mangold in and out as far as the center's concerned, it's showing up as far as the run game's concerned. And we're seeing that in terms of the fact that Chris Ivory is just not able to find holes, and is just not able to. He's a between the tackles runner, and you know that. So he's going to be able to pick his spots by running between the tight ends. He's not looking to get around the edge as much, okay? And with Ivory and the middle of the offensive line being a problem for the New York Jets, that's just going to slow him down a lot. And that's where I believe the real problem with the New York Jets running game is so far, Amiri.
Right, right. And, you know, you talk about the situation with Ivory and the Jets' offensive line in general. I think, you know, that plays in, obviously, to Ryan Fitzpatrick himself, and it didn't seem like Fitzpatrick was connecting at all from the get-go. Only 15 of 34 on the game, so he really had nothing going for him as far as completion, you know, his completion percentage is concerned. He was not throwing the football to really anybody. Take a look at the receiver core. Nobody really got a big game that you would expect from the New York Jets. Brandon Marshall was very silenced. Obviously, Eric Decker was another force that was kind of muffled by the Buffalo, you know, receiving or the Buffalo defensive back core. So I think a lot could have been done in as far as the offensive contributions are concerned to change the way that this outcome came out. I also think on the defensive end as well, we saw moments where the Jets defense was just unable to stop LeSean McCoy, and that was surprising because you're talking about a Jets team again that has, you know, one of the best, if not the best, run defenses or at least defensive lines in the National Football League. And I would not be surprised if that stat gets hit, bumped down a little notches after this game, because really LeSean McCoy was able to get whatever he wanted for the most part of that game. So,
right.
You know, you're talking about the Bills, 22 points total. But both of those points came in the second and third half. So it's not like the Jets were allowing them to consistently dominate them. I think it was just the Jets just were not able to generate anything consistently that would sustain them for the rest of the game. And that's definitely a huge problem.
Yeah. You know, I was going to go back to a little bit of the running game, but I do want to touch on Ryan Fitzpatrick as well. The fact that, you know, injured and showed that he could play with the injury during the Jags game, during the Bills game, did it show up a little bit? Yeah, but I don't think that's going to be, you know, a defining factor there in that game. I think it was clearly the Buffalo Bills came in ready to play. They were amped up thanks to good old Rex, and you know how he can get his team ready for a game. That's really what I'm going to chuck that one up to the Jets. So they're going to enjoy themselves a little bit of a mini bye here. You know, they're going to get to sit back and watch football this Sunday as the others play, you know, as the other teams in the division get to battle. We're going to talk about, you know, New England and the Giants. And I know you can't wait for that one. That's going to be a fun one at MetLife Stadium. Always having fun on the Green and White Show. Amiri Tulloch there. Joseph Haas here. Make sure you follow us both on Twitter. You can follow your man Amiri Tulloch on Twitter at Amiri Tulloch. You can follow your boy Joseph Haas on Twitter at Jersey Haas. Now back to more Jets football. Nick Falk also on IR there, Amiri. So the kicking game, taking a – you know, I just kind of really thought that, you know, in a perfect world, the Jets were really close, and Nick Falk kicks the game-winning field goal for the Jets against the Buffalo Bills. Just one more for Coach Rex Ryan is we both remember how much Rex Ryan really loved Nick Falk as a kicker and kind of had him as his, you know, his secret weapon, his ace in the hole kind of, you know, when it came to sticky situations for the Jets offense. Nick Falk really providing a lot of offense during the Rex Ryan administration and Nick not being able to perform in that game versus Rex was a little bit on the ironic side there as far as I was concerned. Did that ever come to your mind, Amiri? Did you ever think of the whole Nick Falk, Rex Ryan kind of situation as you saw that Nick wasn't able to make it for that game?
Right, yeah. I think the Rex, honestly, the whole dynamic of Rex Ryan leading up to this game was interesting to watch, just knowing the anticipation that Jets fans would have, obviously. And I think that situation only added to the overall kind of fiery situation that was brewing this week. I mean, leading up to it, and then obviously after the game when we got a chance to see Rex Ryan do his usual post-game conversation with the media. But honestly, I did not hear one word about the logistics of this game. I did not hear one word about the what the Jets would have to do to defeat the Bills. All I was hearing is how Rex Ryan is treating this game, or Rex Ryan and how he's entering a game against his former team. So it was a little nostalgic back to the days when you would go a week host without hearing anything about the team, but dominated by New York by Rex Ryan conversation. So it kind of took me back to that place, because I remember weeks on this show where we would sit there and we would just be highlighting Rex Ryan quotes. You know, we have a segment, Rex Ryan quote of the week, and that was
exactly
how it was.
It was what Rex said. That was exactly right. Yep. He was always it got to a point where he actually was the most charismatic member of the organization, and someone that everybody wanted to hear what he had to say next. So I completely agree with you. It was kind of like we talk about a throwback Thursday and the game being on Thursday. You can kind of highlight that, but it was kind of a throwback week for the New York Jets media, and Rex Ryan definitely talked about how much he missed some of the New York media. Actually, in his post-game press conference, pointing out some beat writers, personally, and talking about different articles and ways they covered the New York Jets when he was there, and their coverage this week with him being on the Bills. So, he missed that a lot and really got into it. I guess maybe because up in Buffalo, there's probably I won't disparage, but there's not as many beat writers, let's say, as there are down here in the Manhattan area to cover the Giants and the Jets. So, Rex coming in, doing what he wanted to do, and I'm pretty sure that he had this game circled on the calendar, as they say, since he put on that blue and red sweater. And what did you think? Hey, by the way, what did you think of the Christmas Bowl? Like, wasn't that? I mean, with the Jets in the green and the Bills in the red, it looked like someone had put on Twitter, and I loved it. It was like the elves had ganged up and started fighting each other. Like,
yeah, I also know there was a lot of conversation from the colorblind NFL fans out there that did not take well to that. So the NFL did not think it out clearly. It just didn't look right for some reason, just one colorway or one main color. That threw me off a little bit, definitely.
I enjoyed it. You know why? To me, like, I literally did. What did I put on Twitter? I was like, this is how we are now taking a look at how Santa Claus plays Madden on franchise mode. Like, I'm pretty sure that's probably a look at how Santa Claus would dress up because I know you could pick the uniforms, and I like the whole monotone look. I remember when it first came out in the Denver Broncos used to use it a lot. They would go with the orange crush all the way up and down, or that dark blue all the way up and down with little highlights of orange and white. And I kind of liked that monochrome look. I was into the monochrome looks, and I enjoyed it. It was something a little different to spice it up. Yes, of course, our impaired viewers not so much. So the NFL should have probably vetted that one a little bit better. But moving right along to more Jets talk. And then, you know what, let's talk a little bit of AFC East. You know, we're going to get our guy who comes in and talks AFC East and the rest of the division with us. We're going to get Reverend Ralph in, and, we're going to go heavy New England Giants then. But since I've got a chance to break it down with one of our favorite New York Giants fans, Amiri Tulloch on the other side there, I'm going to ask him really quickly. So what do you think now? Perfect New England team coming in, playing the New York Giants. You know, the Giants, they are playing well. They've come up and really put a foothold on that NFC, East Division. Not exactly a stranglehold, but they're, the team to beat there, Amiri. So tell me, what do you think we're going to see? Is this going to be really a throwback to those old games? I mean, we're all going to talk about the two Super Bowls the Giants basically took away, stole from the New England Patriots. Yes, stole from the New England Patriots. Okay, so that's all going to be, in the background of this game. Well, but what are you going to be looking for when you watch both these teams tussle?
I think that's going to be a fantastic matchup, mainly just because you have the obviously New England at 8-0, you know, coming and facing off against the New York Giants at home. I don't know. I would love to believe that New York can come out, pull out a win, because that would be crucial, as you mentioned, not only for the division, but just in general, being able to, you know, boost their confidence for the remainder of the season. At 5-4 right now, the Giants, as you mentioned, still the number one team in the division. But let's not, you know, forget Philadelphia is knocking on the door at 4-4, and I believe that they take on the Dolphins this upcoming week. So that could be a win right there as well. So I think the Giants need a victory for divisional reasons, obviously. And then, as you mentioned, it's always a huge matchup whenever you play New England and the Giants, and I think we saw that obviously similar with the Bills and the Jets this past week, because you had that build up to it. And I think there's a similar, more gravitational build up to Giants and Patriots, obviously, because of the legacy that these two teams have had over the years. As far as the Giants are concerned, though, statistically, I think one of the things that I've noticed so far is that the Giants have put up points on the board, Haas. I mean, you think about it, 32 points against Tampa Bay, 49 points in the loss against the Saints. And it seems like every single week they're able to put up at least 20 points on the board, 25, you know, and forward. So I've been really impressed by how the New York Giants have attacked games offensively. I just think the biggest concern against a team like New England, obviously, will be how they're going to stop them on the defensive end. So that's going to be the biggest question mark entering this game against the Patriots. But yes, at 4:25, that's going to be like a nice game right in the middle of the day. And we can certainly situate ourselves for what should be a very intriguing one indeed.
Yeah, we're going to talk a whole lot about that game. It is going to be, it's going to be a highlight of the weekend. Patriots, Giants, you know, we're going to talk JPP. We're going to talk Coach Belichick versus Coach Coughlin, you know, two elder statesmen now in the NFL. So a lot to get into there. Back to the Jets. Now, a team that I thought should really, and still has a chance now, but with the Buffalo Bills right there, that 5 seed, and that's what I believe the Jets should be focusing on, is getting that 5 seed, you know, because the way it looks within the Colts division, I just really think if the Jets can focus and really get themselves to 10 wins, 11 wins, easily 10 wins, they could be hosting a playoff game. Whoever gets the 5 seed is going to, you know, in terms of the number one wild card team, plays the worst division winner. Right, so I'm looking at the 5 seed being. It looks a whole lot like the Jets could, if they get that 5 seed, host a playoff game, and that's where I really think. I think it's now at the time of the season where you can kind of look ahead and try to see where you're going to land and look at the teams around you and the divisions and how they're playing. I mean, you see what the Bengals are doing, and yeah, we'll just wait to get the Bengals in the playoffs. But you see what the Bengals are doing. The Patriots, you know, it's going to be very hard to catch up with them already. 4 games behind them in the loss column. So the division is out of the question. So you're really trying to be the best wild card right now. I mean, do you agree or disagree with that one, Amiri?
Right. I mean, in the NFC, obviously, and we see it in the AFC even too, you know, the AFC is right now a situation where the wild card team will have to, you know, prove themselves against a formidable competition, as we've got those 8-0 teams, those, you know, teams that have to this point, have really not had a contest at all. And same can be said in the NFC as well, as you just mentioned. You talk about the NFC, you talk about a team like Carolina, who's been fantastic. But even if they, you know, even if the team is 8-2, Haas, we've kind of slept on the Minnesota Vikings, who have slowly, quietly crept to 6-2. The Arizona Cardinals, who you've obviously been on from day one, 6-2 as well in their division. So, I mean, you're talking about a situation where the overall structure of the NFC is set up. So we're going to have a lot of competition, whether you're the top team or if you're, as you mentioned, sneaking in, quote unquote, as the wild card. So let's see. We shall see, especially when you have a team, again, like Minnesota, who normally is not a member of the postseason competition this time around the year, you know, playing extremely well at home. So, you know, we'll keep an eye out. And no doubt about it, the postseason is looking like it'll shape up to be a very a thorough postseason where you will have competition regardless of where you stack up standing wise.
Exactly. I mean, there's going to be what we're going to end up having is we're going to end up having a couple of really, really great battles here. We're going to have a battle for, you know, the second seeds as you know, first seeds, you're trying to knock off that first seed, but there's going to be a really good battle for that second seed and getting that first weekend off. Then there's going to be that battle in terms of who wants to be the best wild card and possibly, you know, host a postseason game. So you're going to have a lot of little battles as we come in, you know, kind of down the final stretch of the NFL season and getting into the postseason. Never battling. Always just having good, clean sports talk here on the Green and White Show. Amiri Tulik there, Joseph Haas here. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. You can follow him on Twitter, at Amiri Tulik. You can follow me on Twitter, at Jersey Haas. In a couple of minutes, we'll get Amiri on the ice to update us on everything NHL. But right now, as we get ready to close out the segment on the New York Jets, for now, getting back to the Jets a little bit later. Now, the Jets and Bills, both 5-4, Amiri. This is what I mean by a battle right now. I mean, you've got to start looking ahead. You've got to start looking down the schedule and see, okay, who the Bills playing, who the Jets playing. Jets open up. Jets, like I said, get the weekend off. Then it's against the Texans team who, you know, some might have predicted to do a little better, but it looks like for the second year in a row, Texans kind of falling short on expectation. So time to look a little bit ahead there, Amiri. What do you think? You get a weekend off, you know, you kind of rest up, you know, you lick your wounds, you hope to solidify that offensive line situation a little better, and then next thing you know, you're back to playing football next Sunday against the Texans. Jets have got to look forward to going 6-4 and continuing on kind of a streak towards the postseason.
They have to, no doubt about it. And then, you know, as you mentioned, that Texans game, again, we've discussed the expectation aspect of this Jets team and how sometimes they will play up to expectations, sometimes they will not respond to expectations at all. That's another game where the expectations, the anticipation is that you will get a victory. Same can be said for the Dolphins the week after they take on the Texans. So, you know, we saw this stretch emerging, the Raiders, the Jaguars, the Bills, the Texans, the Dolphins, and the Jets really have not taken advantage. They're 1-2 thus far in this five game stretch. 1-2 so far to begin, and that has to change, especially as you mentioned, if the Jets want to try and make it to the postseason and want to compete for that wild card position. This is the time. This is the time, and I think a lot of it has to do with just being ready and anticipating, you know, who you're playing, anticipating the consequences of a game, as you mentioned, comparing it to a team like the Buffalo Bills who are sneaking up on you. Those type of situations come in huge as the season progresses and as the postseason begins to emerge closely. I'm also looking down the line is at a game like the Tennessee Titans a couple of weeks before the season ends, and then obviously the Bills game at the end of the season that Haas. I think if this tight race continues, that game at Buffalo at the end of the season, week 17, might be a very, very crucial game indeed, because that, for all we know, that could be a game that might determine the way that the wild card situation sets up in this AFC. Mm-hmm. So the end of the season is going to be interesting to watch, and I think as a Jets, from the Jets' perspective, you cannot afford to throw away any games. You cannot afford to throw away like they did against the Raiders. Can't afford to throw away a game like they did against the Bills. You have to try and get as much out of a game, as much out of any game as you possibly can. And at this part in the season, the only thing that the Jets can get out of a game right now that's acceptable would be a victory. So that has to happen, Haas.
Yeah, I really look back at that that Oakland Raiders game and see that's kind of the turning point, and also, you know, pat myself on the back. That's the only game I've gotten wrong so far this season for the Jets. I really thought that they were going to take care of Oakland, and not taking care of Oakland is really coming back to bite them in terms of the separation between themselves and the Buffalo Bills, and it will make that game at the end of the season, unless Buffalo just really falls off a cliff here. They seem to be able to right the ship with Taylor at quarterback, so it's going to be a tough one, and that is going to be determining factor in how the wild card sets up for the AFC. I can't see the Dolphins really getting themselves back in the mix, and Buffalo is going to, you know, bite, scratch, claw their way as close as they can to stay close enough to the Jets to make that game really a factor. I can feel the chill in the air, Amiri, and when that chill starts to bite here around the Northeast, I know that it's getting a little cold outside. I know that there's ice forming in rinks around North America, and something tells me it's time for a little ice time with Amiri as he gets on the ice and updates us on all things NHL, including the locals. And man, the Rangers, Islanders, you know, trying to really get ahead of the rest of the divisions. Amiri, go.
Indeed, huh? So yeah, you know, you talk about a situation emerging right now in the Metropolitan Division that has certainly been led by the New York Rangers. Again, this has definitely been the Rangers' year thus far. Only 2 losses on the season out of 17 games played, huh? That's ridiculous to consider. 9-0-1 in their last 10 games. Hands down, have emerged as one of the better teams in the National Hockey League. They're right up there as far as best team point-wise with Montreal, who has 3 losses in 18 games played. Dallas, who win the Western Conference, 4 losses in 18 games played. So the Rangers, again, technically are right up there as the best team or one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. So I don't think much needs to be discussed about the New York Rangers, especially since this has been happening since day one, really. The Rangers got off to a strong start and have not slowed down since. The interesting thing happens when you take a look at the rest of the division. Washington has emerged as the second best team in that division, 23 points. But that race right there from the Washington from Washington Capitals, rather, down to about Penguins, you have the Capitals with 23 points, the Devils with 21, the Islanders also with 21, Pittsburgh with 20 points. So that's a conversation of about 4 teams right there that really have the opportunity to make it. As far as being a divisional threat, but it's so bottlenecked right now. So I want to highlight one team in particular that has really caught my attention as of late. It's my New Jersey Devils. They've won 7 out of their last 10 games. They're on a 2-game win streak. They've improved their record to about 10-6 on the season, 10-6-1 on the year. So as far as a Devils fan is concerned, Haas, this has been very optimistic. The season is looking like it's coming along for the New Jersey Devils after a bit of a slow start. They're getting some more production from their key players. They're winning games by a couple more goals now. They're scoring a lot more. The defensive effort from the Devils is getting a lot better. They're only allowing about 2 goals a game, which is, compared to what they were doing earlier in the season, a lot better. So the New Jersey Devils are definitely progressing in the positive direction, again, at 21 points, 2 points behind the second-place Washington Capitals. Then moving down a little bit to the Islanders, who also have 21 points. Islanders are very similar to the New Jersey Devils. They've been great on the penalty kill. They've been great on the defensive end. Their offense can, you know, improve, has room for improvement. But similar to the New Jersey Devils, season is really moving in the right direction for this Islander team. And then take a 1 point down to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Not much to be said about them. They've always been a strong defensive team. So it seems like this is a situation right now in the Metropolitan Division where you have these 4 teams vying essentially for a spot that's only 2 points or at most 3 points in difference. So keep an eye out on that race there between Pittsburgh, the Islanders, the Devils, and the Capitals right there as the Rangers, you know, run far and away with that division. Keep an eye out on that core group of teams, rather, in the Metropolitan Division. So that, there you go, Haas. That's a look briefly at what the hockey conversation is like around this metropolitan area, Haas.
Definitely had to put you on a tee there and make sure you got in your New Jersey Devils, because they are looking quite good in the last week. It's been very good local hockey, really, and I it's kind of a shame with what's going on in the NFL and with hoops that's kind of take third fiddle around the area, especially with people still coming off of, you know, the heartbreaking loss of the Mets and the postseason awards, and people now, you know, trying to figure out what their baseball teams are doing. I don't want local fans to sleep on this great start that the local hockey teams are kind of getting off to. This is very empowering, very, very good to see that it's going to be some good hockey here for a while, and that always holds us over. So definitely interesting there. Ice time with Amiri. We let Amiri get off the ice. Okay, his shift is over. Great shift. Always strong. Slapped a couple at the goalie as well. Gotta love it there. Now we get into a Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout. Let's let the good people know a little bit about ourselves. Amiri, go.
Indeed, hostile listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week over at Amiri Tulla on Twitter. That is AmiriTulloch. You can also find me at JG Sports Talk on Twitter, and of course at jgsportstalk.com. Huh?
Well, the good people know that they can find me on Hostile Interpretations. That's HAASSTYLE interpretations.com. My inbox is always their inbox. Hit me up anytime, josephhaasnfl@gmail.com. Make sure I get that right. And let's not forget 24/7 on the tweet box. Yes, Twitter all day, every day. That's at Jersey Haas on Twitter. And How can I help you? Hey, Amiri, do you know what? We're doing great things in working capital here at Cash Capital. We got written up by 3 financial periodicals. I'm talking Merrill Edge, which is the blog arm of Merrill Lynch, Yahoo Finance, okay, and also CNBC MarketWatch, okay? So we're really working real good for what we're doing for small and mid-sized businesses. If you have a small to mid-sized business, need financing, any investment help, especially working capital, go ahead, give me a call or shoot me an email. I'm at my email address is joseph@castcapitalfunding.com. That's, you know, cast like as if you broke your arm. So joseph@castcapitalfunding.com. To take a look at any of these websites, at any of these articles, you can just search Cast Capital Corp, and you'll be able to see him. Yeah, man, bright as day. So we're really blowing up as always, Green and White Show. Amiri Tulip there, Joseph Haas here, getting ready at the bottom of the half hour to welcome in a guest, Reverend Ralph Mancini, to talk about the rest of the AFC East, and of course this matchup with the New England Patriots and the New York Giants. I can't wait. I mean, like, I want to talk JPP. I want to know, you know, what's your impression? What's your initial impression after seeing him out there with kind of the club glove thing going on, getting into a couple of tackles, making himself a presence. JPP, is he going to be a factor, Amiri?
JPP, from this two-game stint or so that we've been, or, you know, a couple of games that we've been able to see him, and just from the practicing that we've had, experience that we've seen from the New York Giants, as far as their practices are concerned, it looks like it's going to be a slow transition back for Jason Pierre-Paul. I wouldn't expect his impact to be immediate, but what I would say is that I think there's definitely room for him to come in and play at a high level, because the New York Giants, as we've seen many times over the past year or so, have struggled with that defensive line. So JPP certainly has a role waiting for him once he does get back to full strength.
Without any further ado, and let me not forget to thank at Antoine Staley on Twitter, Antoine Staley, for jumping in for us for the Rest Report last week. Back under center, quarterbacking the Rest Report, where we discuss the rest of the AFC East Division teams and get into a little bit more NFL, is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. Hey, buddy, good morning. Happy Sunday. And glad you didn't catch a kick to the side of the head, that you were able to make it today. Man, did you happen to catch some of that Ronda Rousey action or what? Welcome, Ralph.
No, unfortunately, I didn't see it. I heard she lost, right?
Yeah, man, it wasn't too pretty either. I mean, she really did. We're going to get into this during the show as well, but she didn't look her best. It seemed kind of like after the first 30 seconds and the fight wasn't over, it was kind of like, okay, it's time to fight. And this Holly Holm, you know, out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, she was ready to go 3 rounds, and she definitely put it on Rousey. There were some tremendous strikes and one kind of spinning left foot kick that I bet you Rousey saw in her sleep all night last night.
Well, I'm shocked. I'm speechless.
Yeah, 60-1 underdog coming up and clipping the favorite and champion. Yeah, I was pretty speechless, and so was the rest. Like, I actually saw Twitter take a pause last night. It kind of just – there were just no tweets. There were just no tweets. Like, everybody just kind of stopped tweeting. You know, kind of soaked it all in. And then, of course, with the pictures and the Jordan faces. And, yeah, it was a tremendous day to be online as well as to catch that fight late. I mean, over here on our end, it was darn near 1 o'clock in the morning when that fight finally took place, you know, them fighting in Australia. But I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing for UFC. Let's get into a little NFL and get into that on the bottom of the hour as well. New England gets to play the Giants. Giants 5-4, New England 8-0. I know you get a chance to really seriously take a good look at New England. We're doing the Rest Report. So Belichick versus Tom Coughlin, what are you thinking there? You thinking that Coughlin can pull another one out of his hat and kind of, you know, knock down the New England Patriots, or are the New England Patriots ready to go 9-0?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the only question at this point with the New England Patriots is, are they going to go undefeated? I mean, we know that they're going to win that division. We know they're going to be dominant most weeks. So, I mean, the way they're playing, it looks like they're going to go 16-0 this year, fellas. But I'll tell you what, in this matchup against the Giants, the one thing that worries me a bit about the New England Patriots is the state of that offensive line. Now, they're pretty banged up there, so they're going to be missing Trey Jackson, Sebastian Vollmer. They're going to be missing Marcus Cannon, so that's one guard and 2 tackles. In addition, you know, guys like Nate Solder and Ryan Wendell, they're out for the season. So they're pretty decimated along that line. Now, I heard you before, you know, bring up JPP and whether he's going to be a difference maker or not. Listen, if Jason Pierre-Paul is ever going to do anything, I mean, this is his opportunity to really rise up and make a difference and have a great game because, again, you know, that New England Patriots offensive line is pretty banged up. They're going to have Brian Stork at right tackle. It's an opportunity, certainly, for JPP to do something here. Now, you know, with the Patriots, you know, I think the key here is protecting the ball against the Giants. Now, that Giants defense isn't very good. Now, they're giving up the second most passing yards, and they're giving up the seventh most running yards. So I don't see how the Patriots, you know, don't run up and down the field against this Giants D. So if the Giants have any hope of making this a ball game, they're pretty much going to have to go toe-to-toe with them in terms of points here. I don't see why New England shouldn't put up at least, you know, 28 to 31 points here. So the Giants are also going to have to score. Eli Manning's going to have to be on his game. Now, you know Belichick's going to try to take Odell Beckham Jr. out of the ballgame. But again, you know, Eli Manning's going to have to take advantage of his other weapons as well. So, but I don't see how the Giants win this game just because I don't think their defense is up to snuff.
Now, let me take a look at moving forward with this Jets team. Haas and I were discussing this a little bit earlier. As far as the season's progressing, the Jets definitely need, if they will make it to the postseason, need to compete for that wild card spot. What are you seeing from the rest of the schedule? Is this a winnable schedule for the New York Jets? Do you think they could potentially make some noise moving forward and you know, try and sneak in with that wild card position there in this very competitive AFC?
Well, I don't have the schedule in front of me. I know they go up against the Dolphins again. I know they go up against the Bills again. I know they go up against the Patriots again. In addition, I don't know what their other games are at this point. But listen, you know, the way they're playing, I don't see why they shouldn't be competitive week in and week out. In that division, I think they're right there with the Buffalo Bills. Actually, I think they're a little bit better than the Buffalo Bills in terms of personnel. Now, what happened the other night, they made a bunch of ridiculous turnovers, bad play calls, full over the field. But I don't see why the Jets, you know, shouldn't be good enough to make one of those wild card or qualify for one of those wild card positions. You know, the teams you need to worry about, obviously, yeah, Buffalo now's got a chance all of a sudden, and they need to worry about the Raiders. The Raiders are for real, and the way they're playing right now, I think they're probably going to take one of those wild card spots. So, and then over in the North, yeah, you still have the Steelers, obviously. I don't see Baltimore. I don't see Baltimore making the playoffs this year. But I would say that the teams I need to worry about the most, probably Pittsburgh and the Raiders.
I'm surprised that I was real surprised. I wanted to jump right in here. Mary Tillich there, Joseph Haas here, Green and White Show, being joined by Reverend Ralph Mancini as we discuss the rest of the AFC East here on the Rest Report. Amiri, you kind of let the Rev off the hook with his Giants analysis there against the Patriots. I kind of thought you were going to come in, you know, guns blazing there. I don't know. Maybe I was going to try to bring that back and give you a segue. Maybe you wanted to come in with a little bit of a Giants point, or I'll just step back into the background and allow you guys to continue.
My expectations myself are a little damp
higher?
As well. I'm not expecting too much. I honestly don't know. I don't think my Giants will compete up against this New England team. They've got in that role, and whenever New England gets in that position, that streak that can't be stopped, it's difficult to compete. But we saw that against, you know, the 16-0 Patriots from 2007. So who knows? Who knows?
I mean, this version of the Patriots, it just looks like, you know, they don't have an off week. I mean, they're ready each and every week, you know. So looking at the rest of their schedule, I actually think, once again, and we've talked about this before, looking at the rest of the Patriots' schedule, I actually think that the Jets have the best chance of beating the Patriots. I don't even see Denver beating them. I think the Patriots are going to dispose of them as well. I think they're going 16-0, guys.
Wow. You brought up the Broncos really quickly. Wanted to ask about that, because Peyton Manning falling short on two records against the Colts as they were defeated by Indianapolis again, as Peyton goes back to his old house, not being able to secure a victory, not getting the wins record, and also not getting the yards record, but falling short by 1 yard. So the big celebration there by NFL Network and CBS falling kind of short there, as they had some. You know, it started to get ridiculous with the countdown to the yards thing, and then, of course, him not making it. But, yeah, Broncos suffering their first loss. So kind of the first chink in the armor of the whole AFC championship game between the Broncos and the Patriots, the first one kind of falling against the Broncos there. So we'll see. Those Bengals and those Bengals fans probably yelling at me right now, probably burning me in effigy. That would be a don't even know how else to put that. But back to more talk about the AFC East and the big matchup today, New England versus the Giants. I want to ask about Belichick versus Coughlin, two elder statesmen and two, you know, really established head coaches in the National Football League, both with championships. Belichick, of course, with his and also his ties to the New York Giants as well. So you really know that there is something there, you know, kind of beating his chest that, yes, Belichick does have a heartbeat, folks. There is something in there beating his chest that has something to do with the New York Giants as well. And Tom Coughlin, you know, he's been a guy, and we watched him, you know, his BC roots. We watched him, you know, develop the Jaguars organization. And then now with all of his time here with the Giants as well, can I say this? And this is where the question lies. Are we watching two Hall of Fame head coaches here going at it? That's basically the question. First Amiri, and then to Revan Ralph.
Wow. I think when you talk about Hall of Fame head coaches, I certainly think those two emerge as the forerunners in the conversation. When you talk about what the legacy, I think that to me, I don't know about y'all, but I think that adds up to a coach's resume, right? If you're able to do the same thing year in and year out, be on a streak, be on a roll year in and year out, be the best team in your division every single year, and compete for the championship seemingly every single year, that in and of itself deserves you a spot in the Hall of Fame. So I certainly think that is a conversation I think we all would, or a point that we all would agree with. I guess on the flip side of the conversation, that would be how much do Super Bowls matter in the legacy of a head coach? And in the case of a guy like a Tom Coughlin, for example, you know, you talk about the consistency that he's been able to have, not as great as a guy like a Bill Belichick or somebody who has had that every year, you know, consistency. I would say, though, I really do think that those Super Bowls have to have a huge sway, a swaying power in his ultimate, decision as to, you know, whether or not he gets into the Hall of Fame. Because I think that, to me, when you're able to beat the same team twice, a team that you were heavily underdogs against for both years, really, that to me has when I look at everything that a coach has done, his longevity, especially with, Tom Coughlin, that ability to get your team to win against an underdog like that in such a historic fashion, last drive, clinching, that to me would levy himself into the Hall of Fame conversation. So I don't know if it'll be first ballot. I don't know if it'll be his first year of eligibility, but I certainly think he deserves that Hall of Fame spot. While on the flip side, Bill Belichick to me is definitely in it. No doubt about it. But before I toss it to you guys, let me ask you a quick question. Does the quote unquote cheating that the Patriots have done, headed by Bill Belichick, perhaps taint his resume?
I think it does now, just because, you know, the talk of him doing some underhanded things is so fresh. But I think, you know, once, you know, we get past that and 4, 5, 6 years down the road, I think what people are going to remember are the wins. They're going to remember the dominance of his teams. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can't take away the wins. You can't take away the Super Bowl trophies. You can't take away the fact that year in and year out, the Patriots are just the gold standard in the NFL. Now look, I mean, you know, look, he's not a warm and fuzzy guy, and the Patriots are not the most likable team. But you can't argue with the results, and they can't take away those wins. You know, you could say what you want. His record is there. It can't be touched. And so, you know, I think that the man is just a legend, a coaching legend, because of his consistency, how he does it year in and year out. As far as Tom Coughlin goes, you know what, I think eventually he's going to make it. I don't think he's a no-brainer as a future member of the Hall of Fame, just because, again, you know, even when the Giants have won the Super Bowl, it's not as if they had dominant teams. It's, you know, it was a case of the fact that, yeah, they got hot at a certain point. They've had some, you know, lucky breaks. And I'm not taking anything away from him. But again, you know, if you're comparing him to Bill Belichick, it's just like it's no comparison. You know, Bill Belichick is a legend. Coughlin is a very, very, very good coach. I think Belichick makes the Hall of Fame immediately on his first ballot, whereas Coughlin, yeah, I mean, he might have to wait a while, I think.
Agree with the waiting a while there point on the Hall of Fame. I know we had a little bit of this discussion, and you know how I feel on the Patriots and how I think some of the unscrupulous behavior tarnishes slightly the legacy. But I also agreed with what Reverend Ralph said, is that in the end, the wins will be the wins, and people will remember the wins. And in terms of the coaching comparison, I kind of agree that it would be Bill Belichick going right in as opposed to maybe Tom Coughlin taking a little bit. But let's not forget that you know, and I don't want to compare these two coaches per se and look for, you know, what their similarities and what their differences are and how that will impact whether or not they make it into Hall of Fame. No one's ever going to compare Bill Walsh to John Madden. Both had their own ways of doing things. Bill Walsh, more of a scientist in terms of and development in terms of what he did for the NFL. And John Madden, not exactly known as being that kind of guy, but being known as the kind of coach that every single player wanted to live and die for on the football field. And that goes for something as an NFL coach. And, you know, that's just getting the best out of each and every player. May not be tactically like a Bill Walsh would do it, but John Madden showing that there are more than one ways to skin a cat and get some NFL wins and get himself a gold jacket. So there are a couple different kind of ways there to be doing that. Now, one more situation for Tom Coughlin. And the New York Giants. I say Coughlin, it should be a Hall of Famer, because if Joe Namath can get in on one game, Tom Coughlin can get in on two. Yeah, that's my position there. I mean, those two Super Bowl wins against the New England Patriots should be enough, and his continued performance as a head coach, and just no matter when he was counted down and out, his ability to get the most out of his players as well should be kind of taken into consideration. So, like I said, if Joe Namath can get in on one game, Tom Coughlin can get in on two.
Right, right.
I mean, as a Coughlin supporter myself, as somebody who obviously is a very big fan of his coaching style, but I think another aspect that probably won't get considered when it comes to Hall of Fame, you know, procedural or procedure voting, but certainly should come down and be discussed whenever we talk about his legacy overall, is the fact that he's been coaching this Giants team for about a decade now, right? A decade, maybe 11 years now. It's coming on that roundabout, that corner, where he's now being one of the longest standing head coaches actively in the National Football League. And while that fact in and of itself should not result in a Hall of Fame consideration, I think the fact that this Giants team, this Giants organization has never strayed away from Tom Coughlin, even in those years where it looked like the Giants were going nowhere very straight. It seemed like the Giants have always had this confidence in Tom Coughlin that perhaps you would not have seen in other coaches that have lasted for 11 years. And certainly the two Super Bowls makes it easy. And certainly the fact that a lot of the players enjoyed him makes it a lot easier as well. But the fact that players always bought into Tom Coughlin, and you never really hear a decisive or a rift inside of the Giants locker room, directed towards a head coach like a Tom Coughlin. The fact that he has demanded respect from this Giants team with the new players, with the older players, the players that have been there, like Eli Manning, that have been there since, you know, Tom Coughlin's inception with this Giants organization. The fact that nobody has really fallen off of the Coughlin bandwagon inside of that organization really speaks in volumes, I think, to the way that the culture that he's developed there in New Jersey and East Rutherford. So that will not be determined when it comes to his Hall of Fame voting, but I think whenever we talk about Tom Coughlin, the head coach, the fact that he was able to last this long in New York City and never lose the confidence, the backing, the support of his own team, his organization, is magnificent in my opinion.
Yeah,
hey,
I
let's
mean,
not forget.
I give him credit.
Ralph,
I
want to jump in there.
I give him credit for that, and I give
I
the organization
in there because,
credit.
No, I want to jump in there because I heard the word never a lot, and I do want to say that let's not forget the most powerful and the most outspoken person on the team, Michael Strahan, got in a very big riff with Tom Coughlin, both Strahan and for a couple of years. So let's not forget that, and that was a point in which his job kind of status, I mean, when you went against the best player and two-time and a Super Bowl winner in Michael Strahan versus Tom Coughlin, it did look like there was going to be a choice being made there. So let's not forget that. It hasn't been all roses for Tom Coughlin as Giants coach, and whether or not, you know, his longevity would be or would not be depending on his relationship with players. And that was one of the big ones.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And the other thing is, look, I do give him credit for surviving in a market like New York City. But yet, on the other hand, you know, in a lot of other places, in a lot of other markets, Tom Coughlin wouldn't have lasted as long. If you talk to a lot of Giants fans, you know, they continually, you know, keep bringing up his weaknesses and how, you know, they don't want him around and they're looking for another coach year in and year out. Now, look, you know, give kudos to Coughlin, how he's been able to bounce back from tough times and tough games. But, you know, I mean, if he were anyplace else under, you know, a different regime, under different ownership, you know, I don't think, you know, Tom Coughlin would have been given this long of a leash.
You might be right there.
That's fair.
Yeah, the Giants organization has really wrapped their arms around Coach Coughlin and really kind of made him kind of like their next Parcells, kind of, you know, he's a Giant for life kind of guy. A lot of people have forgotten the fact that he was the first head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars and what he did down there for those guys in Jacksonville and getting that franchise off the ground and only in a couple of years of having that team, getting them to a AFC championship game. Some people have forgotten because he's been with the Giants so long and because, you know, he's so synonymous now with those two incredible victories against the New England Patriots. So I got to agree with you there, Tom Coughlin. You know, in a lot of other places may not have lasted this long, but, you know, it seems like they've kind of wrapped their arms around Tom Coughlin. Us here at the Green and White Show, Amiri, you know, we wrap our arms around the Reverend Ralph Mancini and love every time he gives us his insight. We love when he joins us on the show. People, make sure you follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. Rev, real quick, before you get out of here, you want to give us a prediction on the game? I mean, I kind of see where you're leaning, but let's get a prediction from you on the game before we say good day and good weekend.
Listen, I would love to see a Giants upset today, but I don't think it's in the cards. Again, the Giants don't have the type of defense that I think could shut down or at least, you know, contain the New England Patriots. I look for New England to win this game, I'd say by a score of, let's say, 33-21.
Oh, wow. He did say it throughout his analysis that he thought that the Pats would be able to put up 28-plus points. He goes 33-21 because the Giants can score 33-21 from the Reverend Ralph Mancini on the program. Rev, we always appreciate you, my man. Can't wait to have you on next week. We'll talk about this game. We'll talk about a whole lot more. And remember, you know, if a pretty girl from Arizona decides to try to kick you, do what Ronda Rousey didn't do and just duck.
I'll keep my eyes open. Always a pleasure, guys.
Always a pleasure having you on, my man. Just remember, duck, homie. I mean, seriously, a great weekend there from Reverend Ralph and a lot of great analysis there. Got into the Patriots-Giants game real hard there, Amiri. I mean, I can understand. I'm going to give my prediction as well, but, you know, I'm going to want to get a solid prediction from you. I know this isn't the best weekend, but
right.
But strong. Be strong. And let's hear how it's going to – what do you think is going to happen today against the Patriots?
I think I'm along the similar lines as Reverend Ralph. I think I'm going to say the Patriots do win. As far as the point differential, though, I have a feeling it will be a tight game. I think it will be a close game. I think it will be a heartbreaking game, especially at home for the New York Giants. I think they'll lose in the neighborhood of 27-21. I think it might be a last drive situation. The Giants maybe have a chance to put some points on the board. Patriots defense shows up big. I don't know exactly the ending, Haas, but I have a feeling that this Patriots team, as Reverend Ralph mentioned, once they're in the position that they're in, once they're on a roll, Haas, I don't see a team that's dominant enough to shut them down, especially when you talk about, you know, as you mentioned, the Giants' discrepancies on the defensive end. You know, I don't know if they'll be able to slow down New England offensively. So, yeah, I'm going to say 27-21, Giants lose, maybe a 24-27 result, or 27-24 rather. I just don't think the Giants, as Reverend Ralph mentioned, have enough to slow down the machine that is New England.
Yeah, I know you're right about that, and I'm going to bring into the conversation the Giants secondary, because we both know that they're a little weak in the secondary as well. Defensive line just going to try to get JPP back and hope they can send him at Tom Brady. I'm giving the Patriots just a little bit more points than both of you, and I'm giving the Giants just a little bit less points. So I'm calling for a bigger victory by New England. I don't think Tom Brady's ever going to forget not having two more trophies on his mantle for sure. 38-17. Patriots don't just do it to the Giants, but they try real hard to turn back the clock in this game. 38-17 New England over the Giants. And of course, we all know that since I picked this this outcome, we all know that the Giants will somehow, by some miracle, now instead of having, you know, it land on Tyree's helmet or some outrageous catch like that, they've got, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., who's out there just making outstanding catches all day. Let's see what highlight catch he puts up in this game. So all three of us kind of going for New England there, but, you know, I know somewhere deep down Amiri is holding out hope for the guys in blue to take advantage. Hey, holding out hope, always. One more Fitzy timeout, and then back to the top of the hour. You know what that means. Bigger, Badder, Ben Wayne. We'll be talking more NFL, more NBA, also a little bit more Ronda Rousey as well. So, Amiri, go.
Indeed, Haas. Listeners out there, you can go check me out throughout the week over at jgsportstalk.com, at jgsportstalk on Twitter, at Amiri Tulla on Twitter, AmiriTulloCH. Haas?
Hey, everybody knows they can find me on HaasLinterpretations.com. Also online 24/7 on Twitter at Jersey Haas. My inbox is yours. Joseph Haas NFL at gmail.com. And like I said before, huge things going on in terms of how we're helping small and mid-sized businesses out there at Cast Capital. So give us a shout. Look us up, Cast Capital Corp, on Yahoo Finance, on CNBC Market Watch, and Merrill Edge. You can always get in touch with me, Joseph, at CastCapitalFunding.com. Hey, Amiri, my man. I mean, we're about to get into the top of the hour. A little bit more talking about the fight. I still can't believe it. People are probably right now waking up and finding out, you know, for the very first time that Ronda Rousey has lost a UFC fight. She's no longer the bantamweight title holder. It's Holly Holm, and she came literally out of nowhere, and that left kick pretty much to Ronda Rousey came out of nowhere and knocked her out cold. And out cold goes. Now here's something. Don't you think EA Sports should have kind of held off on the release of their video game, maybe just one more game, releasing it one day before the fight with Ronda Rousey on the cover? You know, you think, you know, they should have just, you know, not so fast, my friend. Or so they just kind of held off. On,
maybe.
Yeah, you just kind of wait 24 hours, see how it goes. You know, it's a whole fight. You know, it's. You know, it's not just, you know, they weren't walking down a runway and modeling dresses or anything. There was a fight that was going to be had. Well, never a fight. Well, sometimes a fight. Never a fight when he joins us on the program, folks. It's the top of the hour, and you know what that means. We're going to finish off strong. Bigger, Badder, Benway joining us. This time on location from Houston, our good friend Brian Benway. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not an I. I know you had to have heard. I know you had to possibly taken a glimpse. We're going to start this off not with football conversation, but with the conversation of the day, the headline of the day. Can you believe it? Ronda Rousey goes down under and goes down.
It's a great day, gentlemen.
Oh, what? It's a great day when Ronda Rousey is defeated. Did I ever tell you the story about how she almost beat me up when I interviewed her in Vegas?
You did. Tell the listeners again. They got to hear this one again. Go for it.
So basically what happened was, when I was with Yahoo Sports, we were in Vegas, and I was covering the UFC events. I did that a lot, as you guys know, with boxing and UFC. So the time rolls around for me to interview Ronda Rousey, and I was a little bit nervous because, you know, you see her in the octagon, and she's dangerous, and she's very intense and intimidating. She walks up to our table, and I had already interviewed Dana White and Chuck Liddell. It was going great. The day was going awesome. We had some great interviews. Next thing you know, Rousey steps up. I reach out to shake my hand and welcome her. She sits right down immediately, doesn't shake my hand, and she seems like she's in a bad mood, like she's perturbed about something already. Her hair is wet, so I'm not sure if she just got out of the shower or just was working out. I'm not sure. So the first couple questions that I asked her, she gave me what all interviewers hate: short answers, like 2-3-word answers, and she didn't enunciate very well. Basically, she didn't want to be there. And I could tell. So, you know, I'm asking my questions, and she's getting more and more upset. So finally, I said, you know what, Ronda? I said, let's talk about some celebrity. I said, because you're crossing over into the celebrity world. I said, is there a celebrity that you might want to get in the octagon and maybe fight? Well, that set her off. That was the question. So then she said, well, how come you got to ask me about how I want to beat people up? How come you can't ask me who I want to give a rose to? I'm a woman. I don't want to always be pigeonholed. And I was like, whoa, you fight for a living. Like, what are you talking about? You beat people up all the time. I can't ask you that question. So then it looked like she was getting ready to, you know, get a little bit more intense. And the look in her eyes, and she's staring me down. And so finally, I didn't ask the question she wanted me to ask. I said, no. I said, people want to know. I said, is there somebody that you want to get into the octagon who's a celebrity and you want to beat them? And she got really mad. She says, I'm not going to answer that. She said, I said, I can't believe you're asking me that question. So then she just finally was done, and I ended the interview, and she got up, and she kind of, you know, when you kind of fake, like you're going to try and like go after somebody, like you like do the fake shoulder thing. Mm-hmm. She kind of did that, and then I was scared. I almost peed myself. And then she got up, and she got up and she left. So that's exactly what happened. So I've always had a grudge against her since then, because she was, you know, I mean, you see her on all these other talk shows and on TV, and, you know, she gives great interviews most of the time, and she didn't want to be there that day. And listen, if you're getting paid a lot of money and you have obligations to do media interviews and to, you know, people want to hear from you, at least show up and at least do your job. It's not that hard to sit there with somebody for 10 minutes and give a good interview. So that was my beef with her. She almost punched me in the face, and I'm glad she lost, guys. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, if she's in the mood for roses now, I'm pretty sure, you know, as she laid prone on the mat, people could have tossed roses on her. Wow. Yeah, always an interesting story. I think she tried to give you the whole, you know, fist clenched, shoulder fake with the head bob to see if you jump out of your seat or something. Ronda Rousey forgetting to give the head bob as the left foot came and planted firmly between her neck and jaw, and that was it. Undefeated streak over. But man, I was telling Amiri pregame how much the circumstances behind this reminded me of the circumstances behind Mike Tyson getting knocked out by Buster Douglas. I also told a story last week about a movie, Troy, so I'll get them both in at the same time. In the movie Troy, most of these fighters, you get Brad Pitt, you get, you know, Hector the Great and Achilles. They all talked about how, you know, their names were going to be remembered, and they just couldn't wait for the next war so that they could do battle, so that they could come out on top and that their names would be remembered. Buster Douglas was never any kind of fighter, no matter what, but we all remember his name. And no one's going to forget the name of Holly Holm and how she took down the Ronda Rousey Express. So it was a fight in some faraway land. I remember the fight with Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson being away in I believe it was in Tokyo in Japan at that time, and also this fight going down all the way in Australia, so far away. Just a lot of the circumstances kind of eerily similar in this, and then of course the defeat of a champion that kind of, you know, kind of been on their high horse at the very peak of their hype machines. It just, you know, there are some similarities there.
You know what? You're actually spot on with that. You really are. And if Buster Douglas doesn't knock Mike Tyson out, we don't know who he is today. Let's face it. He was a less than mediocre boxer, and that was the greatest boxing upset probably of all time. And now you're looking at the Ronda Rousey-Holly Holm fight from last night. Did you see what the spread was, what the line was? Rousey was favored by, I think it was like 2,000, something like that. Mm-hmm. So if you bet on Holly Holm last night, you could pretty much almost retire with the winnings that you had from last night. But you're, and by the way, before we came on the air, I was sitting in my hotel here in Houston, and there are all these great memes and slow motion videos of Holly Holm's kick to the head of Rousey. That was one of the best kicks, honestly, that I've seen in a long time. I mean, that was a perfectly placed kick. It was one of those things where she might try that 10 times and it only works out once. It was a perfectly placed kick. And now you're probably going to get a rematch, because that's what happens in these type of situations. So now we're going to get to see if Holly Holm is a one-kick wonder, so to speak, or if she actually can be a legitimate champion and maybe win twice against Rousey. I will tell you this, though, gentlemen. I don't think that Rousey is going to take the next fight, the rematch, as lightly as she probably did this one.
No, not at all. If for people who haven't seen it yet, Namiri, I know you were catching up with it this morning as well. For people who haven't seen it, the kick was placed. If you were a Olympic, or if you ever watched the Olympics and you saw the shot put, okay, where they hold that big, heavy, round, like stone, okay, and you watch the competitor nestle the shot put kind of between their neck as they're getting ready to do the spin to toss it. That is kind of exactly where the foot landed. I mean, it couldn't have been any more perfectly placed. And Rousey, right out, right down to the mat, and that was over. Referee having to stop the fight because Rousey couldn't defend herself. That was just, I mean, just you couldn't have placed that kick, like you said, any better. A couple of teams that are, oh, see what I did there. A couple of teams placed in some precarious positions. The New York Giants against an undefeated New England team. How about Baylor last night getting placed in a precarious situation? All the Texas teams are out of the national championship hunt now. Brian, what are you going to watch?
Man, you were great at that segue, by the way. That is how legends are born, those type of segues right there. I will tell you that right now. And by the way, we talked about Baylor last week, and I remember I said this last week on the show. Baylor is highly overrated, and we saw it last night. I watched, actually, a lot of that game. I got here to Houston about 7 o'clock last night. I have a couple of events here this week, and I was out with some friends last night, and we had a couple of games on television last night. We had the Baylor game on TV. We had the Houston Cougars game against Memphis, which was a heck of a game. And then we had the Rousey and Holly Holm fight on as well. So I was at a really good establishment last night that had a whole bunch of these things on TV. And I'm talking about this Baylor, like I talked about last week. There's no defense in that league whatsoever. There's almost kind of like, not a cupcake schedule, but there's not a lot of powerhouses in that league. And finally, Baylor comes up against a team that, you know what, gave them a whooping last night. And they don't deserve to be in the national championship hunt. I didn't think they ever did, simply because you look at that defense, it's not very solid. They don't play a lot of quality opponents. So that's why I'm saying, you know what, this doesn't surprise me that Baylor is not in the national championship hunt at all.
All right, so you know, you both know that my college football insight is not the greatest. But, Haas, we've kept an eye out on Rutgers. Obviously, you and I here in New Jersey. I guess I'll toss this question out to you both. What are your thoughts, I guess, on how the Rutgers season has progressed thus far? It's been a bit of an up and down rocky little stretch here thus far. Your thoughts, though, on our team here in New Jersey?
Well, everybody knows that I'm a, you know, a proud Scarlet Knight alum. So, not just a fan, but you know, I'm not just a hair club from president, but also a client. I am not just a fan of Rutgers. You know, I bleed scarlet and black there. So I'm, you know, a little upset about it's the Big Ten, and it's going to be tough competition for a team that's, you know, spent, you know, the beginning of their career, you know, their inception in the ACC and then the Big East. And, you know, they've got to get the players to catch up, but it's about time that they're a little more competitive and have a conference like this. They should be just a little bit more competitive, and they're getting there. You know, I'm just happy they're able to score against some of these teams. So you know, there are going to be brighter days in Piscataway, but right now it's a learning process, and we're going to take it, you know, kind of one game at a time, one big win at a time, and you know, just trying to muscle forward. It's all about getting your recruiting and getting your talent base up to the level of the competition that you're playing. You know, they've got to get more Big Ten bodies in there. With a move like this into this conference, you expand, you know, your recruiting radius. When you watch a Big Ten game, you get to see the reach of the Big Ten and how far, you know, their fans are from here on the Eastern Seaboard all the way to California, where the champion of the Big Ten plays in the Rose Bowl. So in many different places in between the Big Ten touches. So you've really widened and opened up your recruiting base. So Rutgers, they'll get there. They'll get there. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
Maybe a little bit more time than you can probably think of as an alum, I would assume. But when you're looking at Rutgers, we knew it was going to have some growing pains going into the Big Ten. And just like you talked about Big Ten bodies, I think you're spot on, because you look at the Big Ten and it actually is what you talk about, big. They're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. When are they going to bring back Greg Schiano? They need a Big Ten coach. Greg Schiano, I think, would be the guy. I think he has the mindset for it, and I don't know how you feel about the coaching staff, but we always hear his name brought up whenever there's an opening around that area. But I loved him when he coached at Rutgers, and his career went right downhill after he left. But I know it's probably, you know, just speculation and a pipe dream. But I think you're spot on when you talk about bringing in those bodies, because it's a completely different way of playing football. It's that hard nose, punch you in the face, up the gut type football with the big guys up front. The linebackers are huge. Heck, even the wide receivers have legs like tree trunks, and the running backs are extremely huge as well. I think you're looking at it a step up in competition, which is great. So now you just have to get in some guys that can play that type of football. And I have, actually, you know, being from the East Coast as well, being from upstate New York near the Lake Placid area, we used to get a lot of Rutgers games on TV when I was growing up. Now I'm not an alum like Haas is, but I've always kind of kept an eye out for Rutgers. I think it's a beautiful campus. I love that stadium, and I'm a fan. I want them to be a success, because they're kind of like the little engine that could. I know that probably is really corny, but they're the little engine that could. They're a small football program. And I remember that game, I'm sure you guys do too, that big Thursday night national game a while ago, and they were undefeated, and they had the big upset win, and everybody flooded the field afterwards. That's what we want to see, I think, with Rutgers. And even though I wasn't an alum there, even though I still don't live on the East Coast anymore, I still want to see them be a success, and hopefully down the road they will be.
I agree with you there. A lot left in the Rutgers tank. We're getting there, as we're all going to say. And it is a matter of the bodies. They'll get there. I have some faith there, and I like that conversation that you brought up. I do agree that Greg Schiano, more a Big Ten coach than anything else, and why not have him land, you know, back at Rutgers. I do enjoy what Coach Flood is doing here at Rutgers. So I'm not, you know, asking for him to step down anytime soon, but you know, it may be the same voice gets kind of silenced in the locker room. Maybe you know, the motivation isn't there by the players. Oh, who knows? But if there is ever a time for Coach Flood to leave, Coach Schiano would be one of the coaches that I would you know, kind of throw his hat in the ring, and it would work from my perspective as a Big Ten coach. I completely agree. Taking the conversation away
from college football into a couple of other sports, which have also been completely just, I mean, can you believe it here? Green and White Show, Amiri Tulloch there, Joseph Haas here, being joined by the great Brian Benway on the road today. He's in Houston, folks. Make sure you follow him wherever he is on Twitter, at Brian Benway. That is with a Y, not with an I, folks. Hey, let's get into the NBA. And you know, I'm going to bring it down to your guys down there in San Antonio and in Houston as well. And you know, you can't forget Dallas, who's kind of won their little Super Bowl this week in the DeAndre Jordan game, which I thought, you know, got blown a little bit out of proportion here. We spoke about it. I thought, you know, just kind of dropping it. Didn't realize it was really going to get hot like that. But the New York Knicks, you know, hitting and scoring with Porzingis, and the Brooklyn Nets almost getting their second victory of the season against the Warriors last night, taking the Warriors all the way to overtime. It took one shot to get this game back to the way it should be. Shot gets the Warriors into overtime, overtime game win. But back to New York Knicks and Porzingis, fourth pick overall. KP really lighted up here for the New York Knicks. They've got a little something. Can the Knicks be that team, the one that surprises all and possibly make a playoff run, Brian?
The echoes are awakening in Madison Square Garden, I think, as we speak. That Phil Jackson's doing a nice job there with that pick. And you know what? I don't want to bring down the excitement about the Knicks, but they're in the Eastern Conference, and we see how bad the Eastern Conference has been over the years. The Knicks, I think, are a playoff team this year. I really think they're, you know, maybe 7-8 in the Eastern Conference this year, which, hey, you know what? You'll go up against probably Cleveland or Chicago. And the Knicks, if you look at them, the way they're playing up and down the floor, getting some of that scoring like you mentioned, I always like it when the Knicks are competitive, and I think the NBA does as well, because it's obviously the number one media market in the league, just like when the Lakers are doing well, the number two media market in the league, more eyeballs are attached to the TV screens. And I'm just a big fan of New York City, Madison Square Garden, the mecca of basketball, the mecca of sports. So it's fun to actually watch Knicks fans and watch Spike Lee have a smile on his face sitting in the front row at Madison Square Garden, you know, early on in this NBA season. And I'm thinking the Knicks are a playoff team, but the Eastern Conference is so fickle, and the talent is not there like it is in the West, and we've talked about this a ton. There's no shock to anybody there. But if you get into the Eastern Conference playoffs as a 7 or 8 team and you win a couple of games against the Cleveland Cavs or the Chicago Bulls and, you know, work towards the offseason for the next year, it won't be all that bad. But again, it's a rebuilding process for the Knicks. I've always been a huge Phil Jackson fan. So when you look at the draft of Porzingis there, smart move by Phil. He's still the basketball genius making that pick. But, you know, I'm hoping the Knicks are going to do well. And so far, so good. Let's see if they can sustain it throughout the entire 82-game schedule and see how much they'll gel here going on through. I'm still not a big fan of Derek Fisher as a head coach. I love Derek Fisher as a point guard in the NBA, but I'm still not a huge Derek Fisher as a head coach kind of guy. But we'll see what he can do here in year two.
Amiri, your thoughts on the Knicks real quick and whether or not they have what it takes. Do you think they're just going to be, you know, just kind of a flash in the pan kind of early season, then everybody finds out about them and they kind of fall backwards? Or do you think this is a team that can make that run? They might get that 7 or 8 seed that Brian's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the Knicks have been just unbelievable to the start of the season compared to what they were doing last year. I think one of the interesting things, obviously, that we've followed thus far for the Knicks season has been obviously the adaption of Kristaps Porzingis in this rotation, in this roster, and to this fan base. I mean, Kristaps Porzingis, the draft pick that the Knicks took in the first round this 2015 draft, met with a lot of skepticism initially, and it's taken a long time for us to see, us Knicks fans, to see the results play out. But I don't think anybody right now is complaining about the way that the New York Knicks went in the draft. So Porzingis has been a fantastic rookie thus far this season for the Knicks. Carmelo Anthony also has looked like he's on point thus far in the season. So at 4-6 right now, the Knicks still do need to pick up some ground, get a couple of victories before they can really start making a legitimate playoff push, in my opinion, to try and get to that, you know, 7th, 8th seed. But yeah, I think if they can continue the same trajectory that they're on as far as being able to, you know, get key production from their important players, this could be a Knicks team that might have what it takes down the stretch to be a competitor, no doubt about it.
Hey Brian, Miri's having himself a good show today. You know, he's getting to talk about his New Jersey Devils being pretty damn good. He's got his Giants in a spotlight game this weekend, and now he gets to brush the shoulders off on the New York Knicks. Gets to talk about that draft pick. Gets to talk about Melo as well. He's having himself a pretty good show over here. He's pretty excited. Meanwhile, you know they got to beat up on my Rutgers guys. You saw what he did there, right?
You know what? Every day somebody wakes up as a new hero, and today Amiri is our new hero for the show.
Today Holly Holm is the hero. Are you kidding me? I'm not saying anything against that woman. I don't know if I could duck that quick. That left foot came out of nowhere. Holly Holm.
I'm telling you what. If you were married to her and you didn't do the dishes, she'd knock you out with that same kick.
Yeah, it would be me. It'd be me and a wet sponge on the floor. Apparently, I still just can't believe it. Like when you see it, it just Rhonda turns around and that was probably it. I'm pretty sure she still doesn't know what happened. I'm pretty sure she's got to watch the replay and go, oh, is that what happened? Because that was just a tremendous fight and one of those things that, I mean, you just never know what you're going to see or have happen from week to week. Hey, definitely a great weekend here in the household. Guess what? My mom gets to celebrate another birthday. She celebrated her birthday this Saturday, and my sister got married. So, like, big, huge, a total family thing here. And then you know, I put them all to bed and watched one chick knock another chick out. So, like, it was a great day all around here in the household. Now, I don't want us to go too far and for us to, you know, we do a sports radio show here. We have a lot of fun, and we always appreciate, you know, Brian coming in and joining us as well. But a man of the world, and he gets to see the world. And the reason why I want to bring this up while we have Brian on the show, Green and White Show, Amiri Tilik there, Joseph Haas here, Brian Benway joining us on the show. Make sure you follow us all on Twitter, at Amiri Tilik there, at Jersey Haas here, and at Brian Benway on the microphone right now joining us. Don't forget, that's with a Y, not with an I, folks. But I wanted to, you know, just take it to a little bit of seriousness for a second, and the incident and just the tragedy across the pond in France, and one of the attacks that happened there, where 130 or so people lost their lives in a pretty senseless manner, if you ask me. One of the venues that experienced a bit of terrorism was a sporting event, and you know, I can't be remiss if I don't think of my buddy Brian, who does, you know, play by play, you know, pretty much every week at a venue. And I really thought of this and really wanted to ask him this question. You know, you see something like that go on, Brian, and it, you know, you wonder, and you're doing, you know, let's say you're in the unfortunate situation where you're doing a game and something tragic or life-changing or dramatic or, you know, as traumatic as what took place in France, you know, you start to get the reports and see what's going on and play on the field as it was in the soccer match starts to get disturbed and interrupted, not for some natural event like the earthquakes in the Bay Area that stopped a game, but for something as terrible as this. You know, what would be, you know, I don't know if you had time to think about it, but how would you, you know, what would your reaction be? How would you best be able to, if I have to use the words, collect yourself, or like, I don't even know what it would be like. So I'm really just kind of asking you, you know, how would you go about that?
And you know what, it's interesting because I had a conversation with my broadcast partner as I was driving yesterday, and it, obviously, it's a scary world. It's a much more different world, you know, than it was 10, 15 years ago. I honestly don't know what I think I would do in that type of situation, but I have had thoughts of, you know, when I do play-by-play or when I'm at all these games, because you see things like this that happen more frequently than before. And I always am wondering, well, if this happened, if I was doing a game, you know, next week somewhere, how would I be able to kind of get out, exit safely, things like that. And you never had to think about that stuff before, which is actually, you know, pretty scary. But if I were in that type of situation, I honestly don't know what I would do or how I would even perform or what would even happen. I think it's one of those things where, you know, when you watch movies and there's these big tragedies in movies, and you see the Hollywood actors in the movie and how they portray what their characters would do, And you sometimes think, would I be able to do that in that type of situation? So I try and put myself in that situation, and I don't know what I would do in those movies when there are big tragedies. I don't know what I would do in that type of situation, but I will tell you this, when you're out in the open, like we are at all these sporting events, times are scary, and you never know what might happen. Hopefully nothing like that ever happens, you know, close to home for us, but you never know. It's a crazy world. I honestly don't know what I would do until that moment hits. I would like to think that I would rise up and I would be a hero and maybe help save some people and get out of there safely, but I honestly don't know. I could freeze up. You never know. So, you know, those thoughts do cross my mind. It's scary, but, you know, hopefully that'll never have to come to fruition.
I hear you there. Mary Tillich, I know you had the experience and the honor and the pleasure of doing some, you know, sideline reporting for the New York Jets a season or so ago. So again, in a situation, you know, if things, you know, unfortunately, if something like that were happen, you would also find yourself kind of in the middle of a venue around all these athletes while something like that is going on. And kind of, did you have a chance to, with all this going on, did that ever, you know, kind of enter your mind? Did you have a chance to kind of have a thought of, you know, what if and how you would react or what you would try to do in a situation kind of like that if you were on the field and in a venue?
Yeah, I kind of agree with what Brian mentioned. It's one of those things where I feel like my response would be like an instinctive one. And it's especially because you never expect or you never predict a moment like that taking place. So even if you do contemplate it beforehand, you never enter a game anticipating, you know, today might be a day where I'll have to use this, you know, getaway knowledge, or I'll have to think on my feet quickly. I guess in response to what happened in Paris, I mean, it's unfortunate because there were moments, and you know, if you watch the videos that showed the explosion happening, it seemed like there was just a lot of confusion and nobody really knew what to do. And I think that would probably be a similar situation that would transpire. If I was in that position, it would be confusion. I wouldn't know what to do because that's a situation that doesn't happen frequently, a situation that you aren't necessarily accustomed to. So I would definitely agree with Brian in the sense that, unfortunately, I think my initial reaction probably would be just confusion and looking around and trying to ascertain what is going on and what you know, the steps are to get myself to safety, what the steps are to get everybody else around me to safety. So I think in that situation it'd be a very instinctive as far as the next move or the next reaction. But yeah, I don't think anything can compare or can be taken away from the events in Paris. You know, the situation that has happened is just you know, it's a tragedy, and it's one of those situations again where it's hard to predict. You never anticipated it. It was scheduled to just be a regular Friday evening in France, and obviously it did not end up that way. So it's hard to predict these events. It's never something that you expect, which makes it very difficult again to react when the situation does arise.
I can completely understand that in my background in training and not just doing some personal protection for hey, it's been a while, but I remember I used to do some personal protection for stars like Fantasia. So you would get, you know, some, you know, you would be and have yourself in situations, and in training, you learn to, you know, to always expect the worst and to kind of prepare for that in how you operate and how you plan and how you go your day to day. So hopefully I would hope that all that training would also kick in as well. Been around a few tragic events, nothing as tragic as that, but also, you know, had been able to maintain the composure as well. I would just hope that all that training would kick in and I would be someone who helped as opposed to not. But then again, all the training in the world sometimes you can have, and then you're in the heat of the moment and you know, you react like everybody else would react with some confusion and some fear. So, you know, I just thought we couldn't go any further with, and especially having you guys having the experience of being out there, you know, either on the sideline, Amiri, or either in the play-by-play booth, Brian, and just getting that perspective of what, you know, what could happen, because you know, like, you never know. So, and also wanted to make sure that we acknowledged, you know, the 130 plus people that we lost for absolutely no reason. Always a pleasure having you on the show, Brian. Sorry today leaving you on a little bit more somber note than usual, but always appreciate your intake and really want to thank you again for joining us, and can't wait to have you again soon. Enjoy Houston. I'll catch you again next week, Brian.
Thanks again, Brian.
All right, guys. See ya.
Got it. Brian Benway joining us on the program. Really appreciate him. Remember on Twitter, at Brian Benway on Twitter. You can follow Amiri Tuluk on Twitter, at Amiri Tuluk. You can follow myself on Twitter, at Jersey House. Another Green and White show coming to an end. Another great show, and really appreciate everybody's take, everybody's candor as well. So usually here's the portion where we turn up the music, but for today, there's not going to be any music. That we'll just kind of leave on a moment of silence and join you guys again next week. Again, I really appreciate everybody who tunes in each and every week. Amiri, another great show. God bless. Go Jets.